welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. You are here. Hello, everyone. How's everyone today? This is Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. So glad to be with you today. Today, I have a really interesting and fantastic interview with Laura. Laura was in Australia, as you guys always hear me say. So delightful for me to talk to somebody who's living in tomorrow. And we just had a great conversation about her journey through what started out, at least when she knew about my work, as pelvic pain, and then being able to look in the rearview mirror at episodes of extreme burning mouth and OCD, and understanding that all of these things were different symptom imperatives of TMS. And it's just a great story. And it's a great reminder to everyone out there that is struggling with things like OCD and burning mouth, two things that are very, very common topics that people reach out to me about. If some of these symptoms are stuff that you struggle with, it's great. It's just great to hear her story, because even though she didn't know about TMS work until after she used it to cure her IC and pelvic pain, and then was able to realize and understand the way the symptom imperative worked, it's still a great message for anyone with any of these symptoms. And of course, as you guys know, the way your symptom is showing up is immaterial. So in Laura's life, even though she didn't fully understand it at the time, the burning mouth was everything. Oh my God, it was stealing all her focus. It subsided through a placebo. You'll understand exactly what happened. Then her OCD came up so strong that it really owned her. She was able to get through that, and then the pelvic pain started. And this is such a common story with TMS. It is the symptom imperative. If you're curious to understand more about the symptom imperative, if this is your first time ever hearing about it, please look through my back episodes. Lisa and I did an incredible summer series on the symptom imperative, and I've been told it's one of the most powerful episodes I've ever done. And I've also, over the holidays, replayed it because I wanted people to make sure to hear it. And so that's something you could look at if you needed more information about that. But anyway, this is a great talk with Laura. I love when people come forward and share their stories, because it is really, really impactful to just hear somebody else who's nothing like you and just like you share their story. So that is coming up today. Just a couple of notes. If you are interested in being with us in person, my Omega retreat is selling fast and furious, and I would love to spend the week with you. That is live and in person at the Omega Institute in upstate New York, Rhinebeck, New York. Go to eomega.org and search my name, Nicole Sachs, or go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, and click on the retreats tab, and you can find the link to sign up. Lisa and I will be there. Gigi will be back, and so many other familiar and new faces. And so I really hope to see you there and give you a hug and be able to spend real time with you in person, because I know how much that is valued in this virtual world. And of course, if you're looking for more immediate attention and you want my expertise, you want to hang out, you want to have me answer your questions directly and be in community with these incredible people, go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, scroll down a bit on the homepage, and you'll see the button to join my membership community. It's a monthly community. We do two Zooms a month. I'm with you guys every day on a private Facebook chat, and it's really, really very powerful stuff. All right, my loves. Well, I hope that this podcast finds you well. I hope you're doing okay. I know it's not an easy time to be alive, but honestly, when is? I send you big love. Enjoy this conversation with Laura. Hi, everyone. I am here with Laura. Welcome, Laura.
Hello.
I am so pleased to be here with you today. So Laura reached out to me and my team because she had a really inspiring story of recovery. And she mentioned a few things that I know this community is always asking about, some real buzzwords. She mentioned burning mouth, she mentioned OCD, and she mentioned bladder issues. Three things that people are always writing to me about. So I brought her on all the way from Australia, which is always a delight for me that we're like in two different days. Lisa makes so much fun of me for this. She's like, why are you so excited about this? I'm like, because it's today for me and it's tomorrow for her. But anyway, welcome, Laura. I'm so glad you're here with us. And as always, just start with your story and we'll take it from there.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much. It's really great to be here. Okay, so I will start with my bladder pain, because that's really the work. That's really the pain that led me to find you and this work. Yes. So basically last year I was going through a lot of emotional turmoil, lots of stress, a lot of really big feelings. And I developed the bladder pain, and it didn't actually come on straight away. I actually had a UTI first. So I had a UTI, and I've had UTIs my whole life. I take antibiotics, they clear up straight away. So in this case, I had the antibiotics and it cleared up. But a week later, I had this really horrible pain in my bladder, really strong urgency, and I just... I didn't know what was wrong, because I'd go back to the doctors. I went back, I think I went maybe that week, like 4 times back to the emergency department, because it was just the most excruciating pain. I was sure something was horribly wrong with me. And they couldn't find anything. All the tests came back clear. And I was just so confused, and it was a really tough time. It was a really dark time, which I know a lot of the other listeners have shared, you know, as soon as you kind of have the pain. And also it did not help Googling and reading stories from people saying, oh my gosh, yes, I've had this for 25 years. I've had to, you know, leave my job, blah, blah, blah. And in those moments when I was reading those posts, the pain, I could feel it getting worse. I could actually feel it increasing. And I was like, oh my God, what is happening? And yeah, so it was really, that went on for, I was actually really fortunate because it didn't take me too long to find you. But during the really painful time, it was like, it was hard to do anything. Basically, I wasn't sleeping. It was hard to eat, exercising, studying, working, dancing, all the things I used to do out the window, because I just had to lay in bed and just like, try to Google.
And it's such the story, you know. I just completed my book. I just handed my book in, so that was a very exciting moment. And I've been sitting with your stories, with everyone's stories, and they're all exactly like that. People who went from vibrant and exercising and living a full life to essentially bedbound. So this is obviously incredibly tragic, which is my whole purpose, my whole reason for being, is trying to help people not get caught in that cycle. So what happened? What happened at your lowest when you were able to make the change in mindset?
Okay. So I had this moment. I was lying in bed. It was like 3 a.m. and I was in excruciating pain. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I was just praying to the universe, like, please, if you show me a way out, I will help people do the same. And I really in that moment just surrendered to it. And then in that moment, I was like, okay, something needs to change. And then maybe a couple of days later, I still had the pain. I ended up searching, I did all the Googling, and I realized I had all the symptoms for interstitial cystitis, which I'd never heard of before, but I was like, yep, this ticks all the boxes. So I went on Spotify and I searched healing interstitial cystitis naturally. And then I found an interview with the V-Hive with Whitney. And so I listened to that. Yeah. And Whitney's been on your podcast. So I listened to this whole interview with Whitney and I was like, oh my gosh, she's saying exactly my story. And even listening to this podcast on my way home from the hospital, where I went to get another test, actually, I noticed my pain decreased just as I was listening to this. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I need more information. Right. She recommended your podcast. So I jumped onto yours and I listened to the interview with you and Whitney. And I was like, oh my gosh, like all the light bulbs were going off. I was like, wow, I just had hope. I had so much hope. And I was just like, I was kind of like in shock that, that I'd found something. And it was really exciting. So from that point, one of the first things I did, which Whitney said was she just kept exercising and started to kind of show her body that there wasn't any fear with that. So I started running, and like, I'm not a runner. I'm, you know, I do other exercise, but I'm like, okay, I just need to do something to get out. And so I started running. That was probably one of the first things I did, even though I was in excruciating pain. And I noticed as I was running, the pain would kind of subside a little bit. And I was like, that's very curious. Like, it's all very curious, curious work.
Yeah.
And then what would happen is I would be, oh gosh, I'd be like in meetings at work or something, and the pain would really flare up, and I would just kind of sit there and just tell myself over and over again that I'm safe.
Yes.
I'd say, you are safe. It's okay. You've got this. It's okay. And that I noticed would take my pain down from like an 8 down to like a 7. Or
yeah.
Six.
So you saw something. You saw a glimmer of hope in the change when it came to sending your nervous system a message of safety.
Exactly. Yeah. And I started doing the work. I was really, because I feel like when I know there's when I'm going through something, whether it be emotional, mental, you know, physical, and I know that there is a way out, I will do it. I will do the work to get there because I know what's on the other side of that. And I know that it's possible to have a state of being that is not in suffering. So I really was, I felt like I was very motivated by all of the work. And I have nearly listened to all of the podcast episodes, but I just found them amazing. Like, so inspiring listening to everyone's stories. I just, you know, even if it's not the same bladder pain, it still resonates. It's still all the same stuff. And I was
it's crazy. And what's even crazier is that your bladder pain, if people are moving through this process and the symptom imperative takes hold, sometimes bladder pain changes and you get stomach stuff or you get headaches. And if you learn to wear it loosely and not need to attach any one symptom to a trouble in that area of your body, you find that it really unsticks a lot more quickly. So I have a question for you, Laura. So it sounds like you were like really solid in the mindset. You were listening to the podcast. You were sending your nervous system a message of safety. Were you doing the journal speak as well?
Yes. Great question. So it's very interesting because I have been journaling my whole life, especially over the last couple of years. I've been doing a practice called Morning Pages, which is
I love the artist's way. And actually, when I did the artist's way, I remember thinking, this is so much like journal speak.
Yes. It's just that stream of consciousness writing, just write whatever that comes out. And it's, you know, same time. It would take me 20 minutes to do that. And when I started the journal speak, what I found the real difference was that I was able to really get to the underlying emotions and really purge. So I saw it as the three lists are really fantastic because you really, even going through the lists is a bit of a purge because you have to kind of remember all of, you know, the traumas that you've been through and all of the really stressful and horrible events. Putting those lists together and then reflecting on the personality traits that I've had my whole life, I was just, oh my gosh, this all makes sense. So I love the journal speak, and I love the way that you don't read over it. You're just doing it to get it out. You just, you know, you can burn it or, you know, whatever, to get rid of it. I just feel like it took my journaling just to the next level.
Yes. Yes. And you know what also I want to mention, and I wonder if this was like this for you. A lot of people say, well, how is journal speak going to be different because I've always been a journaler, or how is feeling my feelings going to be different because I've been in therapy for 20 years? And what I've found, and I'm curious in your experience, is that the efficacy of the work is contingent upon knowing and making the connection between the cessation of your physical pain and the emotional excavation. Meaning, like, if you can know, the nervous system only has your conscious and unconscious input with which to know whether or not you're safe. And so when you make that conscious connection between, okay, I've always done morning pages, or I've always been a journaler, but now I'm making these lists, I'm sitting with my trauma, and I'm understanding that it gets stuck in the body without this outlet. And now I understand that doing this can bring my nervous system into rest and repair. Did you find that you were making that conscious connection?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, definitely. It was very much, it's very similar to practices that I've done in the past with meditation as well, and allowing things to come up and then not changing it, not trying to make it anything different, just allowing it to be there and practicing that attitude of acceptance and allowing. And I felt like it was, it's the same practice with journal speak, but you're going quickly to the target. So that's why I feel like it was really helpful for me, because I could really feel, I'd go through my list of journal speak and I'd my three lists, and I'd be like, okay, what do I want to write about today? Which one has the most emotional charge? And I would go in there and I would go in there and I would sit in that fire and I would feel all the feelings. And then I would do the compassion practice and really, you know, put that balm on it as well. Cause I think that is just absolutely so important when you're doing any deep work, to have that self-compassion and that kind self-talk. So
yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that a little. First of all, I just want to tell you how delightful this is for me, because you remind me so much of myself. Because when I figured out that this work was the way, I literally got excited. Like, I was just like, ooh, let's look at the lists. And like it, I can see it in your face. Like, this was like not a drag for you.
No, I mean, it wasn't a drag. It was very difficult. Hard. And I must say that, like, I did have relapses, and I did have moments where I would get better and then I'd have another really emotional thing that would happen in my life, and the pain would come back, and there would be moments where I would lose trust, and I would jump onto your beautiful community of journal speak and I'd say, hello, my pain has come back. And they're like, oh yeah, classic TMS, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I'd like be freaking out. And then I would do the work and calm my nervous system, and it would be okay. So it was just like this spiral, this cycle. And that's why I really believe that healing is a spiral. It's not a straight line. You kind that's of right. go up, you come down, you learn things, you forget things, you remember it until you embody it so deeply that when things come up, you know that you've got that trust in yourself to make it through.
Yes, I love that. And I love, so I know that I interrupted myself, because I was saying, okay, well, you remind me of me, which of course, you know, what would I love more? But you did bring up a self-compassion practice, and you seem to get it, how important it is. So let's sit with that for a minute, because I do find that on this podcast, I spend a lot of time educating people on the brain science. I spend a lot of time talking about journal speak in the work, and I probably don't spend enough time talking about how integral a self-compassion practice is. And since you seem to have brought it up, let's take the opportunity to be there for a minute. So, Laura, why do you think, like, in your words, is it so essential when you're doing journal speak and you have to go to these difficult places to find a self-compassion practice? And what did yours look like?
Wow. Yeah. I feel like it is so important, because otherwise for me, I can get stuck in the really heavy, dark stuff, and I can kind of put my focus on that, and that can really take over. So for me, self-compassion, is a few different things. The first kind of step that I kind of do with self-compassion is really this practice of acceptance. And I know that that sounds really difficult. I know we talk a lot about it in this work, but what really resonated for me was accepting that I'm having trouble giving myself self-compassion. And really accepting that I'm having difficulty accepting. And so I feel like it's just like another layer that kind of goes around everything, kind of like a hug that goes around all of it. Like, there's a part of me that really doesn't want to accept this because it's scared and it's trying to protect me. And I know that. So for me, self-compassion is a lot to do with my self-talk. And I really feel when I am talking to myself kindly, it really what I've noticed, I do a lot of meditation. I also do Reiki healing, and I've observed energy in my body, and I know how it feels. And so what I've observed is that when I'm talking to myself really kindly, like I would a child or a good friend, is that it actually strengthens my solar plexus chakra, and it really brings this energy like, okay, I can do hard things. I can do the journal speak. I can sit in the fire of these emotions. And so I felt like, yeah, that was like one aspect of it. So really self-compassion for me is sitting with things, not running away from myself, being kind to myself, and also taking action that is going to be supportive of myself. So that could be anything. If it means, looking after my physical health and my physical needs, like sleeping well, like eating well, like, you know, exercising, like all of these things, I think are parts of self-compassion.
I agree. And you know, it's interesting. I had someone ask me today, do you ever wish that you could go back and do it all over again so it could be new? And I go, to be honest with you, it's always new for me because I'm constantly teaching it and living it in my own body. And in the spirit of that, a new kind of self-compassion I've found lately, so I'll just throw it out there in case it helps you or anybody listening, is a level of acceptance, not only just overtly kind, so not just like you're safe, hand to heart, like all the things we can do to ground ourselves. It's not even overtly kind or not kind. It's just such blatant acceptance. So for example, if I'm really keyed up about something, right? There's an emotional thing going on and then someone else is acting in a way I don't like and everything feels out of control. And then I look at my calendar the next day and I'm like, oh my God, there's so much. I get this feeling and the feeling is like panic, I guess, or it's just super uncomfortable. So what I do instead, because sometimes in those moments, I'm not up for you're safe because I'm like, it doesn't feel safe. So what I do in those moments is just say, wow, it's so interesting. You're having all these feelings. Well, feelings aren't facts. So they are real, but you don't actually have to do anything about them. You can just say, I'm having a lot of those feelings. And then you can left foot, right foot, breathe. You can take a shower, watch some TV, go to bed. I've acknowledged them, but I don't need to romance them right now. I don't need to continue that over and over conversation in my head with like what I would say to that person if I could. Like, I just press pause on all that stuff and I just say, wow, I'm having a lot of really unpleasant feelings. They will definitely shift. So I'm just going to like put them in the sidecar and like continue my night. And that feels compassionate for me. And guys, I'm going to tell you, it saves me a shit ton of time because it always does shift. And the next day I always do feel better or different, or my schedule that I thought was going to be so unmanageable, like works out. And even if it doesn't work out, I've lived the day. I really think that we as human beings spend a tremendous amount of time thinking we need to do something about what we feel. And so anyway, that's my latest. Does that ever happen for you?
I love that you've shared that. Yes, that's definitely a part of my practice as well. And it really reminds me of, I know that you like Michael Singer as well, because I've heard you quote him before, and he talks a lot about the witness consciousness and falling back behind what you're noticing, which could be thoughts, emotions, you know, anything that's kind of happening in your consciousness. And I feel like when I practice that kind of self-compassion, it's almost like I fall back behind and it's just deep listening. I'm just deeply listening. I'm deeply present. I'm not trying to change it, but I'm just there. I'm just there. And I think even just being there with that attitude of acceptance and non-judgment is healing in itself.
So true. So true. All right. Well, I'm going to make a bit of a turn because I know that I want you to be able to talk about some of the things that you realized were TMS in the rear view once you got the bladder stuff under control. The reason I want you to talk about it is because even though you didn't use my specific work or specifically TMS work to deal with your burning mouth syndrome or burning tongue, some people call it, and your OCD, those are two really, really powerful symptom imperatives. And I know, Laura, from what you've told me in your email, that looking back, you know now that they were just symptom imperatives. So, but at the time, you were having some interesting experiences with them. And I really want to hammer home for people, because I get so many emails all around the world. People panic about burning mouth. They literally, I have had it myself. Have you ever heard me talk about mine?
I have. And honestly, that's what helped me put all of my pieces of the puzzle together when I heard you talk about it. I was like, what?
Holy cow. My burning mouth, when it comes out of nowhere, is scary as hell.
It is horrifying. Yeah. It is a horrible, horrible existence when you have that. I really feel for everybody, honestly.
And I really think we live in such a society, especially, well, I guess not lately, always, where it's so looked down upon to fully express oneself. And I do think, especially for women, even though I'm sure men also fall, you know, into that trap sometimes, where we are literally on fire with the things we can't express. And that's why journal speaks such a powerful tool for burning mouth, because although you might not be able to say it to, you know, the person or your boss or, you know, your partner or your family or even just society at large, you can say it in your journal speak. So just tell us a little bit about that experience and that funny story about the antibiotics, because I know it's very similar to Gigi's story.
Yes. Okay. So basically, for the past 7 years, I feel like I've been learning the same lessons from different angles, different symptoms, burning tongue, OCD, all of this kind of stuff. And it was your podcast episode that I put all the pieces of the puzzle together. So basically, I'm 36 now. 7 years ago, I was in a relationship, a 6-year relationship, and we were coming to the end of it. I knew this, and I was terrified. I was terrified of having conversation. I was terrified of breaking up. I felt completely lost and out of control. One day, I had this burning just on the tip of my tongue, and I thought, probably an ulcer. It'll go away in a day or two, whatever. And it did not go away. And it did not go away for 3 months. And it was excruciating. And it was like my mouth would swell up. I would have ulcers on the roof of my mouth. My mouth would then peel.
Yes.
My mouth was on
fire. My mouth peeled.
Yeah. My mouth was peeling. My tongue was peeling. The roof of my mouth, it was swollen. Sometimes it was difficult to talk. The pain was keeping me up at night. It was just horrible. What I realized at this time was, even though I was going through this breakup, well, about to go through this breakup, I couldn't really feel the emotions of it because all of my energy was focused on my tongue.
Yeah.
And I feel now, looking back, I know that this was protecting me.
Yes.
The pain was protecting me from the emotions that were too painful to feel. So what happened was I ended up, I was actually looking to a lot of metaphysical healing at this time, learning into different chakras, and understood that this energy was kind of in my mouth, and maybe it was an invitation to really speak my truth and, you know, connect to my heart and what I really wanted and needed. So we ended up breaking up. And I still had the burning tongue, and I was like, oh, what is going on? After that, I felt like I released a lot of the emotions through kind of going through the breakup. But I still couldn't really feel them because the tongue was so painful. So after that, it was the same thing. I did all the specialists.
Yeah, of course.
You know, all the doctor visits, STI checks, specialists thought I might have Crohn's. I did tests for that. Also on Google, everyone was like, yep, I've had this for, you know, 20 years and it's never gone away. So absolute fear, horror. And then I ended up going to a new doctor, and she said, maybe this is a mouth infection, and gave me a different antibiotic. And I took the antibiotic and it actually just went straight away. Like the pain, everything, it just, you know, as soon as I had the antibiotics, and I thought, wow, I was like, amazing. But I didn't want to think about it anymore. I didn't want to talk about it anymore. I didn't want to Google it because I was so scared that it would come back if I started thinking about it again.
Right.
So basically after that, I kind of just moved on. But what I've realized now looking back and after doing your work and Dr. Sano's work, I remember reading, he said that sometimes the medication can work, not because of the medication is targeting an infection, but because the belief in the medication is so strong, like a placebo effect. And I think this is similar to Gigi's story with the...
Well, yeah, the reason your story is so similar to Gigi's, which is a beautiful thing for me, because it can't even be argued that the antibiotics worked, is how quickly they worked, which was the turning point in Gigi's entire story and life, because she knew, since she has a scientific background and a very strong one, that there's no way for the pain to go away within an hour of taking an antibiotic. It's just not the way antibiotics work. And so when you told me how immediately yours went away, I thought, wow, that is, it's exactly the same. It's like when you're so desperate for relief, for safety, for an answer, for a partner, that when you get this antibiotic as a partner and you know that it's going to help you out, the relief can be so great that the symptoms abate immediately. But that's such a great key, knowing that it is TMS. And what was interesting that you said, and I'm interested to know how quickly afterward this happened, is you launched right into really debilitating OCD. How long between your miracle antibiotic burning mouth cure and the OCD? Was that pretty right away?
It was. I think what happened after that, I had anxiety first. I've always had anxiety my whole life. Yeah. So I went to anxiety, and then it was a couple of months probably after I went through another really challenging event in my life, and my emotions were so intense. I felt like I couldn't regulate myself. And so what was happening was that all this energy that would be my emotions was going up into my head, and it just felt like I was ruminating and obsessing nonstop. And so this is when things got really, really dark again, because I was having really horrible intrusive thoughts about violence, about hurting other people. I was experiencing something called harm OCD. There's also something called pedophilia OCD, which is really, really difficult. And I really just wanted to take a moment to name this, because I know how hard it is for people to speak up about this. I've also have experience working in a medical, a mental health center. And also I moderate an online support group for people with OCD. And people jump in these groups all the time with these intrusive thoughts that are really, really scary and debilitating. And they are so scared to get help because they are really terrified that people are going to judge them, or they're, you know, going to get in trouble. And so I really wanted to speak openly about that here, because I know when I was going through it, fortunately for me, I mean, it took me like 6 months to realize what I was dealing with. But once I did understand what I was dealing with, I knew that I was able to get help for it. So the next part of like looking back and seeing now that this is also TMS makes sense, because it, again, my intrusive thoughts were distracting me from the emotions that were too difficult to feel.
Yes.
And so that's, And then that was how I kind of put all these pieces of the puzzle together. So I guess once I kind of realized that I was dealing with the OCD, I knew that I had to speak about it. I actually went through a really long period. I didn't want to tell anybody what I was going through, and I was just trying to heal it myself. Yeah. Trying to just heal it myself and not have to get it out in the open. I was really lucky that my housemate at the time had been through something really similar. And she said, Laura, you need to do exposure response prevention therapy. You need to expose yourself to these thoughts, in which helps to neutralize the anxiety that you're feeling so that you're not obsessing over them anymore. And So that's kind of where I jumped into seeing a therapist who specialized in OCD. At this time, I was also studying Reiki healing, and healing from a spiritual perspective was really important to me as well. So I started my Reiki mastership, was doing the psychoeducation, and doing the ERP, which in hindsight, now I can see is very similar to journal speak in that it's kind of excavating and purging all of those things that you don't want to face.
Yes.
And I really felt like, because when I was going through these intrusive thoughts that were really, really terrifying, I didn't actually write anything down for 6 months. And I was so scared of even writing what I was experiencing on paper that I was just like, and this is like,
no, it really sounds exactly like journal speak. And actually, I'm going to tell you, I have been doing this work for a number of years, as you know. I've actually never heard of these two things that you are discussing, because I was not, in terms of my private practice, I didn't specialize in OCD. But I'm actually not, I'm not interested in glossing over it. I think it's important that you're saying this, because first of all, because of the kinship to journal speak. The whole point of journal speak is our entire body is screaming to divert us from these dark thoughts that our nervous system deems a threat to our survival. And I can't think of a more overt and obvious threat to survival than thoughts of hurting somebody. Obviously, it sounds pretty violent, hurting oneself, or pedophilia, which obviously means thoughts of abusing a child. So these are things I've never heard of, but I think if this is a reality, and you say, obviously you've been in this world of OCD and it's a reality for a lot of people, it just makes sense to me to like not gloss over it and to say, wow, that sounds incredibly traumatizing. Because I mean, I have no idea how it would feel, because it's never happened to me, but I'm going to assume, and maybe you can help me enlighten me, it must feel like your brain has been hijacked by an energy that is not yours, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was really terrifying, because it's actually like your brain turns on you and you don't. There's no way out, because all of the fears, and I was experiencing intrusive thoughts, images, and usually OCD targets what you love. So it would just be relentless, really. And it's really something for me. I had something called pure OCD, which might look like, from the outside, there's nothing going on, because all of the compulsions are happening inside my mind, the compulsions of the rumination. Whereas, you know, people might have heard of like the cleanliness kind of
right, like
compulsion, washing hands. But yeah, what they don't see is that a lot of the time these people are doing these compulsions because they are having these intrusive thoughts that are very horrible, but they're not talked about. And part of my mission, really, now that I've been through this, is to be an advocate and to educate people and to speak really openly about it. Because as soon as I started sharing my story with OCD, so many people would come out and say, hey, yeah, me too. You know, thank you for sharing. And I'm really grateful for Rose Cartwright, who has shared her story before me. She has a book called Pure, and it's also a TV series called Pure. So I really recommend, you know, people that are going through these things to kind of educate yourself about it. But yeah, I will say that, it was a incredibly dark time in my life. And so what happens in OCD is you face a fear, you come to accept, you know, unconditional acceptance is really the practice of moving through all of this. And then what happens is that the goalposts change, just like the symptom imperative. So maybe I'm not scared of hurting anybody anymore, but now I'm scared that I'm not real. And so I obsess right over that. And then maybe I face that one. It's so fascinating. And then maybe I'm not scared of that. And so it would just keep rolling around, because it's trying to find the fear that will keep you in rumination. So,
wow. All right. Well, then it's, you know, I never know how these interviews are going to go. So this is really, she's educating me. So if anybody out there is suffering from OCD and is suffering in silence, I really love that Laura brought this up, because, you know, Oftentimes, journal speak is really challenging if you don't feel like you have the right support. And it sounds like if you have these kind of thoughts, you might need some support around your journal speak. So we'll put it in the show notes, but if you aside from this book, Pure, in the series, do you have any suggestions of where people can go to get the right support? Because all of this, okay, so I've just been taking it very seriously and I continue to, but I also want to say OCD, although it sounds terrifying, is just another symptom imperative. It is just like back pain. You know, you guys don't see Laura's face. I see her nodding emphatically. It is just like back pain. It is just like bladder pain. It is just like migraines, irritable bowel. It can ping around your body. OCD sounds like a really great way for the nervous system to grab your attention. So if you're experiencing this, don't be afraid. Just know that you are dealing with boring TMS, like I like to say, but you also might need some support around you to manage the feelings that come up in journal speak. So what would you recommend, Laura?
There's a website called Made of Millions, and they have really great resources and really good information there. They also, there's different websites that have links to find people to help you with OCD. So usually like therapists that might specialize in exposure response prevention therapy, people that really get it, because what you really want is someone that's not going to judge you. And right. Also with OCD, it's not so helpful to talk about all of the content of your thoughts. It's actually really not, yeah, it's not really the way through. What we want to do in this practice is allow ourselves to feel the feelings, practice acceptance, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. There's also, yeah, it's very similar to this work. It's the same work essentially, with chronic pain. And I found for myself when I was going through this journey that it helped me to connect with community, other people that were going through it. I was part of a support group for people with OCD, and you know, it's great because, you know, they get it. And so I know it can sound really confusing if people haven't heard of it before, but once you kind of understand what you're dealing with, it's the same thing. Like you put the steps in place, and I just wanted to say that healing is possible, and it's the same way as healing chronic pain. And it's like, it's not like I'm ever going to experience an intrusive thought again. I still experience intrusive thoughts, just like people will still experience pain. However, yeah. The difference is that now I practice acceptance, and I practice, yes, non-resistance, and I allow it to move through my body and move through my mind, rather than being attaching fear to it or attaching meaning to it.
Wow. This is great. I really love this. I love the idea of applying these really healing principles to anything that is distracting you. You know, when you said just now, you know, when we talk about OCD, it's not really that helpful to like sit and discuss so much of the thought that, and I know why that's not helpful, because it reminds me the fire is the problem. The fire is the emotion and the repressed and all the stuff that's repressed. The pain itself, the symptom, is the fire alarm. So when people constantly talk about the pain, just like if you were constantly talking about the intrusive thoughts, it's just like the firefighters dousing the fire alarm. Like that's never going to get you anywhere. What you really need to do is turn the hose toward the fire, which is the deeper, more emotional experience that your intrusive thoughts or your pain is trying to keep you from feeling. You know, mm-hmm. Intrusive thoughts are so clearly like jump scares. You know, they're just like, look over here, look over here. Mm-hmm. And like, really what's happening is there is deeper stuff to feel. That's mm-hmm. really you. That's not the hijack of your brain. Yeah. So
yeah,
this is really, really, really good stuff. So Laura, I know we are rounding out our time together. Do you have any advice for people that you want to share when it comes to walking this path, or any kind of message you want to give as we close up?
Oh gosh, there's so much to share, but I'll just share one thing that I've learned through Michael Singer, who is the author of An Untethered Soul. He also has a podcast, and I was listening to him one day, and he said, if there was a guru or if there was an enlightened being that could come down and heal you in a flash, they would never under any circumstances do that, because it means that you have not evolved enough within yourself to heal yourself, which is the purpose, you know, this evolution to purpose of our lives. And so what I really took from that was that anything that we go through, if whether it's, you know, mental turmoil, you know, OCD, chronic pain, there is an opportunity in there for healing at a deeper level. And you might not see it at the moment because you're in the darkness. And if you follow the hero's journey, which is a really great format, if you look that up, there's a really great visual, you'll see where you are on the hero's journey. And there's a part right down the bottom where there's a death and rebirth. And it's really difficult to see your way out when you're really in the darkness, but that's where the alchemy happens. That's where the transformation happens. So there's something that needs to change in that moment for you and will bring you out the other side. And I know this because I've been through this journey the last 7 years, you know, different health things, OCD, the chronic pain. And each time I've come out the other side with deeper self-compassion, a deeper level of unconditional self-acceptance, you know, connecting to my heart, connecting to my truth. And I just, yeah, this trust, there's a level of trust there. So what I just wanted to say to people is that just trust your journey and trust your process. And yeah, there'll be something on the other side for you.
Yeah, I love that, because the thing is, all we want ever is the magic pill. All we want is the, you know, to give away our power to doctors, to procedures, to surgeons. We do actually want that, because we don't want to face whatever that darkness is that we know is lingering in the periphery. And as soon as you just relent and surrender and accept and turn toward it and open your arms to it, you know, it's been waiting. It's been waiting for you to receive it, whatever it is, whatever memories from childhood or struggles day to day or conflicts with your own personality or all the things that I teach here week after week. They're just sweet babies. You know, like you pull back the curtain, it's like the Wizard of Oz. They're just little sweet babies back there. They're wearing really scary masks with pain and with thoughts and with the things, you know, that push us in the other direction. Once you stop fighting everything and everyone, and you just are able to compassionately turn toward the things that you have been resisting, they vanish. It's so incredible. I've seen it over and over in my own body and in many, many people that I've worked with and witnessed. And it's a beautiful thing. And I can see in your eyes and in your message that you've really, really come a long way through a lot of experiences that one would label suffering. And mm-hmm. and that's okay. Because as Michael Singer says, you're not nobody. If there was a guru, he wouldn't grant you the wishes anyway, because the whole point is the obstacles in the path are the path. And, you know, and it's so hard to feel good about that in the moment, because it fucking sucks. And I'm always down to say, this isn't fun and it doesn't need to be, and it doesn't need to be easy and you don't need to like it, but here we are. And thank God there's a solution and we're living in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And I also just want to add that when I learned about your work and Symptom Imperative, I listened to your Symptom Imperative episode like on repeat, like for a whole day. And that in itself was so healing. And I just encourage everybody to just learn, one other thing about when my bladder pain left, I was in the shower. I was like, oh my God, I'm so grateful it is gone. I noticed my mind went straight back up to anxiety and rumination and obsessing. And I was like, oh, that's it. I caught it. I was like, caught it. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I was like, I'm not scared of you. And as soon as awesome. I said, you know, I'm not scared of you, it went and it went. And that's my daily practice now, just, you know, acceptance and facing these fears.
You know, it's so funny. I'll say one thing. Tinnitus, or some people call it tinnitus, is such a rough symptom imperative for people, ringing in their ears. And I often think it's just funny for me that I have experienced on and off tinnitus my entire life. I remember it from a kid. And I used to say to people, can you hear the pitch of the room? That's just for whatever reason, the way I would describe it. And somebody would say, no, I can't hear it. Or yes, I can hear it in my own head. And I would go, haha, that's funny. And because I never labeled it as scary, so obviously my nervous system could use it not at all to distract me from whatever, you know, stuff I was dealing with. It has come and go my whole life, and it's so nothing for me. The other day, I was sitting, standing, driving, whatever, and I heard like, and it was this crazy ringing just in my left ear, and I thought, ah, it'll go. And it lasted for maybe 15 seconds, and then it just slowly left the way it came. And I really just think that if we could wear it loosely, if we could allow these things not to scare us and get stuck in our bodies, if we could do what you did in the shower, be like, what? There you are. I see what you're trying. I got you. It is just a beautiful way to live because there is no life without these sensations. Sometimes you feel things in your heart and sometimes you feel things in your body, and they are literally interchangeable. You could have a bad mood in your stomach. You could have anger in your back. You could have grief in your head. It's meaning your headache. It's going to happen, and you can have repression in your intrusive thoughts, and it's all normal. And when we start to normalize this and embrace it, that's when they can flow through like that. And I can't imagine what might happen to me or would have happened to me if I heard a little bit of that ringing and locked up and said, oh my God, what's that? God knows, it could be in my ear all the time. And like, what a drag, you know? Like, and so I really just encourage people to kind of listen to this episode on repeat and to, you know, just impress upon oneself how fluid the symptom imperative can be and how much we can practice acceptance and not allow it to get stuck in our body. So Laura, thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
So this has been wonderful. Laura, thank you so much for coming and sharing your story. You've been such a lovely guest. And I hope you're enjoying tomorrow in Australia. Let me know how it is.
It's pretty good so far.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, everybody. Well, for those of you out there, if you are enjoying the podcast, please hop over to iTunes and rate and review it. It really does help people find the podcast. People like Laura, people who otherwise might not be availed this incredible knowledge and change, a life-changing, transformative information, which everybody needs. So go ahead and go do that if you don't mind. And until next week, this has been the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs, and I will see you then. Bye-bye.